took my mom out to a movie, and for once I got to go.
And to all you step in there.
Hello, this is Matthew Tombers, and you're listening to WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we have all sorts of things to tell you about this morning, including about how state lawmakers failed to act on climate change during this current session of the legislature that closed last week, and how the...
There is currently no vaccine or specific medication to treat COVID-19. Testing is limited in the United States. The only way to flatten the curve is through collective action. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommend that all Americans practice social distancing to slow the spread of the disease and to keep from overloading the American medical system. This means staying at home and avoiding other people as much as possible. Information is available at cdc.gov/COVID-19.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Kravitz and Son Roofing, a local family-owned and operated full-service roofing company for more than 48 years. Specializing in residential and commercial roof construction, repair, maintenance, and replacement, using high-quality and affordable roofing products. Information at 518-567-4026 or online at KravitzandSonRoofing.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC News Update, and you can go to WGXC.org in the WGXC Newsroom for more information about anything in this report. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. Melanie Lekasovic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Coxsackie Athens Board of Education voted 6-3 June 17th to retire the Indians as the district's mascot and team name. The decision was reached after months of meetings, a public forum, surveys, and two conversations with a representative of the Stockbridge Muncie community, the indigenous peoples who once lived on lands where the school district is now located. Those in favor of eliminating the mascot said it is derogatory to indigenous people, while opponents to the change argued the mascot represented the district's heritage and was seen as a positive symbol of strength and determination. Board member David Taylor introduced the motion to do away with the mascot. In addition, the district will add components to the curriculum to teach students about the history and culture of the indigenous peoples who once lived in the area. There was an effort made during the meeting to slow down the process and to delay the vote, but the majority of the board chose in favor of the plan. It will take time to phase out the mascot and its imagery, which is included on some athletic uniforms in the gymnasium and elsewhere on the school campus. A new mascot and name has not been selected yet. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Melanie Lekosovic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that construction changes mandated by the state of New York have pushed back the opening date of the new Greene County Jail in Coxsackie. The State Commission of Correction recently retracted some of its approvals on the project. Quote, there were a couple of things they wanted to be changed, unquote, Greene County Legislature Chair Patrick Linger said. It is unclear how much the delay will cost the county because the Commission of Correction has not made its list of change orders final, Linger said. But we're not even sure how much they want us to do or what they want us to do, unquote, Linger said on June 18th. County officials are uncertain how long the opening will be on hold because there is a delay in the procurement of materials as well. Among the issues cited by the state was an area of fencing on the perimeter of the grounds. A final decision has not been reached on how to address the fencing issue, but the county will likely put up some sort of barrier around the chain link fence, Linger said. There are also staffing issues at the jail. Greene County legislator Charles Martinez said last week, quote, "We are short on corrections officers. We have 27 and we need 30, unquote, he said. Quote, "We are looking to hire people, but they have to be on the civil service list, unquote. It is unclear at this time when the facility will open its doors to house the incarcerated. Most of the administrative operations formerly housed at 370 Mansion Street in West Coxsackie have been moved into the new jail building. About 75% of the staff was able to move into that building about 1 month ago," Linger said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Mid-Hudson News reports that leadership of the Chicago-based Hecate Energy Group on June 17th didn't have any new details when they met with the town of Copaig officials about their proposed 60-megawatt solar farm that would cover at least 255 acres along Route 23 and 7 in Columbia County. Quote, "We tried to impress upon Hecate Energy's representatives how devastating their project would be to our rural community as it is currently sites scaled and designed," unquote, said town supervisor Jeannie Medler. She said the company leadership came to the session, quote, "without any new plans, designs, ideas, or considerations on how plans to reduce the impact of its proposed massive industrial solar project on rural Copaig and Columbia County," unquote, Medler said after the meeting about the proposed Shepherd's Run solar project that she and Deputy Supervisor Richard Wolf gave Hecate officials, quote, "an earful. We just hope they actually heard us, and more importantly, we will rethink the project." Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Elila Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Democrats in Hudson's 2nd Ward will vote this week in their party's primary for county supervisor. Current 2nd Ward alderperson Tiffany Garriga is looking to unseat incumbent Abdus Mia. Mia, 60, is serving his 4th year. He previously served as a city alderperson for 11 years. He is employed as a front-end associate at Home Depot in Catskill. He said, if reelected, quote, "I am planning to continue implementing a wide range of my personal and professional experiences that will contribute greatly to the growth of Columbia County and Hudson City," unquote. The top issues facing the community are the COVID-19 outbreak, public safety, and affordable housing, he said. Members of the community are out of work and struggling to afford adequate food and pay rent due to the economic impacts of the pandemic, he said. Mia said the county must promote transparency, gain public trust, and ensure residents and business owners are safe with a police department that is responsive, trustworthy, and engaged in the well-being of the community. He said his experience working with minorities in the community makes him uniquely qualified for the office. Garriga is in her 8th year on the Hudson Common Council and her 7th year as majority leader. She works as an office manager for the Hudson Catskill Housing Coalition, a Speedway employee, and an entrepreneur with her hair and body product company called Moisturize Me. Garriga is launching a new organization called the Black Entrepreneurs Market, serves on the Columbia Opportunities Board, and is the vice chair of the Criminal Justice Reform Group, It Could Happen to You. Garriga said she looks forward to working as 2nd Ward supervisor, quote, "I think I have been a great example of the work that needs to be done and how to get it done," unquote, she said. As an alderperson, she has listened to her constituents and plans to do the same as a supervisor. She sees housing and mental health issues as the top issues facing the community. She said that while the county is doing a wonderful job, there are things that people feel unheard about. Quote, "there are issues that I would bring forward in the county," unquote, Garriga said. The Democratic primary will be held on June 22nd. Early voting continues before that on June 20th. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday should be mostly sunny with a high of 83 and a low around 64. Then on Monday, there's a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high near 87 and a low around 61 Monday night. Tuesday, again, showers are likely. There's a 70% chance of rain, mainly before 2 p.m. The cloudy skies, a high of 71 and a low around 49. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. A new outdoor summer concert series in the town of Greenville begins on July 6th, and it's listed in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. WGXC volunteer programmer Brad Monkel helped put together the series that runs July 6th through August 17th and includes jazz, bluegrass, and rock bands. The Michael Benedict Quartet starts things off on Tuesday, July 6th from 6 to 8 p.m. They're performing in Veterans Park, which is at the corners of Route 32 and 81 in Greenville. That's the Michael Benedict Quartet, Tuesday, July 6th from 6 to 8 p.m. in Veterans Park in Greenville. You can find out more at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdermar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is really me now. No more hiding. Listen, we're all worried. We're all in pain. That comes with having eyes, with having ears. But just remember one thing. It can't get any worse. It can only get better. Quitting is not going to make you strong. Living will. So just hang on and hang in there. You know, I know all about the hating and the sneering. I'm a member of the Why Bother generation myself. But why did I bother to come out here tonight? And why did you? I mean, it's time. It begins with us, not with politicians, the experts, or the teachers, but with us. With you and with me, the ones who need it most. I believe, with everything that's in me, that the whole world is longing for healing. Even the trees, the earth itself are crying out for it. You can hear it everywhere. It's the same kind of healing I desperately needed and finally feel has begun with you.
Ao teu lado, fumei desajustado um cigarro. Vesti a sua camiseta ao contrário, aguei as plantas que ali secavam, por isso o cheiro impregnava o seu juízo. Logo que o perfume do invisível te nega. no dia em que eu me tornei invisível. Passei um café preto ao teu lado, fumei desajustado um cigarro. Vesti a sua camiseta ao contrário, aguei as plantas que ali secavam, por isso o cheiro impregnava o seu juízo.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
And I'm Fatia, and I'm also from Hudson, and I'm 7 years old.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate, and bookish
things. And we're going to do that today. This is our first show where it's just me and Fatia. This is our first time ever doing a show, just the two of us. So, would you like to start us off, Fatia?
Okay, so my book is about I love you, Grandma. I love you, Grandma, because when you see me, you scoop me up ugly and hold me tight. You kiss me and we play together. We always have fun. I really love playing time when I stay with you. We play catch and tag and hide and seek too. I love you because you are always so kind. If I make a mistake, you say, never mind. If I'm worried or scared, you say, everyone cries. Clear up, little one, come on, dry your tears and lie in the grass and gaze up at the skies. And you tell me stories as white clouds drift by. I love you, Grandma, because we have fun all day. And there's always 5 more minutes to play. And when it gets dark and the long sheep dreams, we gaze at the stars before I go to sleep. Grandma, you always make everything seem right. I feel so safe as I hear up at night. I love you, Grandma. I really, truly do. Never, ever will, never be anyone as special as you. I love you, Grandma. And Miss Emily, guess what? My grandma died. I want to talk
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, I know. I was sorry to hear that. I remember when that happened. It's very sad. I also have lost both of my grandmothers.
And I miss them very much. But that story was so lovely, and it reminded me of all the nice moments I had with them. It was very sweet. And you did a really good job reading it. Your reading is getting so strong.
Oh, and this is the end. I love you, Grandma. Join Grandma Bear and her longing grandchild. Grandchild as they share a field of love and a adventure from playing hide and seek and watching the clouds to count stories and gliding at the stars, seeming time with Grandma Bear.
Aw, that's nice. That book is by Melanie Joyce and has illustrations by Lizzie Walkley. And our radio listeners couldn't see the illustrations, but I know that the characters are bears, which is very cute.
Obviously true.
And I looked... What?
I watched one of our radio shows, like, from 2019.
You listened to one?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It was, like, so cool. It was, like, you and Mashuda and someone else with, like, coaches I forgot. Wait, I don't know what, like, someone I forgot. I'm really bad at like, people's names.
At people's names. Were you on the show? I can't remember when you started. You just started last year, right? 2020?
2020.
I think. So you were listening to a show from before you were on it, right?
I wasn't on 2019 show.
Yeah. Did you have fun listening to the show?
Yep.
Have you listened to the show with you on it? Any of our shows that we've had?
Not the show with me on it.
No.
Wait, what was our channel's name again?
WGXC 90.7 FM. Woo! So some people are listening to the radio show on the radio dial on 90.7 FM, and some people listen to it online on WGXC.org. And you can also subscribe to our show as a podcast. So some people listen to it as a podcast. So it's pretty cool.
And you can join us too.
Yeah. Yeah. If any youth out there want to come talk about books, we're always happy to talk about books with people. I did want to make one note about the book that you shared today. If you liked I Love You, Grandma, it looks like there's other books in the same series. I found I Love You, Mommy, and I Love You, Daddy. I don't know if there's an I Love You, Grandpa. I haven't found that one yet. Oh, yeah, I Love You, Grandpa. Phew, I was worried Grandpa was left out. Poor Grandpa. Grandpa bears deserve love and books, too. Did you get that book from school, or did you have it as a gift, or where did that book come into your life?
I had that book, like, just... now, like, 2 days ago, I got it. Like, actually, 3 days ago, because I got it when we were going to... We found it right in, like, the one of the bookshelves in ILDI.
In what?
In ILDI.
Oh, in the grocery store?
Yep.
Oh, cool. I forgot they sold books there. Well, that's nice that you found a sweet book to read.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. And, like since I lost my colors, I couldn't make a book, like, from last week.
You lost your colors?
Yeah, and now I got them back. Luckily, I found them today.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And today I had art class. Before I had art class, I found them. Then I was so happy that I colored. I was closing my eyes and dreaming I had a lot of colors. And I accidentally drew a sloppy mango.
Whoa. It's that time of year, huh? Mm-hmm.
Oh, mangoes are my favorite, but actually what we were drawing was not mangoes. It was actually something else. Like, I don't know.
I love mangoes, too. They're delicious.
And you know, one time we had mango pie for lunch.
Wow, that sounds good.
And breakfast and dinner, too.
A full day of mango pie.
We should love to dig in.
Oops, it sounds like there's some sirens outside your house.
Oh, that's true.
Here, why don't we switch to me talking about a book for a little bit while that noise is happening. So I have a book that I could talk about too that actually kind of reminds me of Fatia because it is about a young artist and it is a graphic novel, a middle grade graphic novel by Chad Sell, who also created The Cardboard Kingdom. And the book is called Doodleville. And I just started reading it this morning, so I'm going to read the description so that I don't give too much away, but also give more away than I've gotten to. So here's the description. For fans of Svetlana Tsmakova's Awkward and Raina Telgemeier's Smile comes an inventive new story from Cardboard Kingdom creator Chad Sell about a group of young artists who must work together when one of their own creations becomes a monster. Drew is just a regular artist, but there's nothing ordinary about her art. Her doodles are mischievous, and rarely do they stay in Doodleville, the world she's created in her sketchbook. Instead, Drew's doodles prefer to explore the world outside. But after an inspiring class trip to the Art Institute of Chicago, where the doodles cause a bit too much trouble, Drew decides it's time to take her artistic talents to the next level. Enter the Leviathan, Levi for short. He's bigger and better than anything Drew has ever created before. He's a monster, but a friendly one. That is, until Levi begins to wreak havoc on Drew's other doodles and on the heroes her classmates have dreamt up. Levi won't be easily tamed, and it seems there is a link between the monster's bad behavior and Drew's feelings. With the help of her loyal art club friends, will she be able to save Doodleville and Levi before it's too late? You have to read to find out. But yeah, so far it's a really cute comic series, or I don't know if it's a series actually. Oh no, I did find out it is a series. There's a second book planned at least. But the main character, I am guessing, is 11 years old, because they have at the beginning of the book, it goes like, here's Drew at 3. Here's Drew at 5. Here's Drew at 7. Here's Drew at 9. And then it says, here's Drew now. So I assume they're going up in twos from 3. So I'm assuming they're 11, but I could be wrong. But it shows Drew progressing as an artist. And she has all these little creatures that she creates that she calls her doodles. And she uses this big thing of butcher paper on her wall to create a city for them to live in, or a town for them to live in. And the thing that they mentioned in the description about going to the Art Institute, while they're in the Art Institute, her doodles come out of her scrapbook and are interacting with the paintings. And she's really worried she's going to be caught having her artwork on the walls interfering with the paintings. And then one of her doodles even steals something from a painting. It's in a painting with a baby that has this fancy hat on, and it steals the baby's hat and takes it home with it. And so she's really worried she's going to get in trouble. But it's an interesting mix of, like, I don't know. It's very fantastical, but sort of grounded in real life. That's very cute. And I think people that like to draw will be into the little doodles that she creates. They're very cute. But yeah, so this is a really fun book. And it was recently nominated for an Eisner Award, which is how I heard of it and decided to check it out. So definitely excited to read the rest of it and maybe even read some more in the series. So I thought I would also highlight some new releases that are coming out this month. So the first one I wanted to highlight is a middle grade graphic novel, Dinosaurs Before Dark. It's the first Magic Treehouse graphic novel book. And Magic Treehouse is a super popular series for kids. And this graphic novel was adapted by Jenny Laird and illustrated by Kelly and Nicole Matthews. And here is the description. Where did the treehouse come from? Before Jack and Annie can find out, the mysterious treehouse whisks them to the prehistoric past. Now they have to figure out how to get home. Can they do it before dark, or will they become a dinosaur's dinner? For the first time in graphic novel, live the adventure again in the very first Magic Treehouse book, with new art from comic artist Kelly and Nicole Matthews. So I'm curious to see if these become popular, because I know that the book series is very popular. And one thing I really like about the Magic Treehouse books is that they have, you know, it's a fun fictional adventure story series, but then they also have nonfiction tie-in books. So for instance, in this one, you know, it features dinosaurs, so they would have a nonfiction book that's about dinosaurs. I think that's a really cool way to get kids excited about learning is, you know, sometimes I read books and it makes me want to research either a time when it was set or a place where it was set or some moment in history. And so I feel like Magic Treehouse did a good job of responding to that by creating that nonfiction content for them already. So moving up in age range, a little bit older for middle grade as well, though, is Force of Fire by Sayantani Dasgupta. And here's the description. Pinky hails from a long line of Rakosh resistors, demons who have spent years building interspecies relationships, working together to achieve their goal of overthrowing the snaky oppressors and taking back their rights. But she has more important things to worry about, like maintaining her status as fiercest Rakosh in her class and looking after her little cousins. There's also the teeny tiny detail of not yet being able to control her fire breathing and accidentally burning up school property. Then Sesha, the charming son of the Serpentine governor, calls on Pinky for help in defeating the resistance, promising to give her what she most desires in return, the ability to control her fire. First, she'll have to protect the Moon Maiden, pretend to be human, and survive a family reunion. But it's all worth it for the control of her powers, right? That's Force of Fire by Sayantani Dasgupta. Can you imagine having fire breathing as a power? Whew, I'd be worried I'd burn things down all the time by mistake. Definitely seems worth it to control that power.
I don't know what to say for that, but something.
You wanted to say something?
No, but
oh, you don't.
Funny.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Because I have an eraser.
You have an eraser?
Yeah. I'm going to color a rainbow.
You're going to color a rainbow? Is that your special power?
No, but I love rainbows.
Well, while you're drawing that rainbow, or erasing the rainbow, I'm not really sure. But while you're doing that, I'm going to talk about one more book. And this one's meant for teens or intended for teens. And so the first two either already came out or are coming out this week. This one, Blackout, comes out next week, June 22nd. And it is by 6 critically acclaimed, bestselling, and award-winning authors. Danielle Clayton, Tiffany D. Jackson, Nick Stone, Angie Thomas, Ashley Woodfolk, and Nicola Yoon. And here's the description for that. A summer heat wave blankets New York City in darkness, but as the city is thrown into confusion, a different kind of electricity sparks. A first meeting, longtime friends, bitter exes, and maybe the beginning of something new. When the lights go out, people reveal hidden truths. Love blossoms, friendships transform, and new possibilities take flight. Beloved authors, the ones that I mentioned before, celebrate the beauty of 6 couples and the unforgettable magic that can be found on a sweltering starry night in the city. And so this is I haven't read it, so I don't know for sure exactly how it works. But instead of being individual short stories, it sounds like the story is kind of all interlinked. So it makes this novel about this time and this place and various people. So each of the authors contributes a portion of it. And I haven't read all of the authors, but I've read most of them and loved their work. So I think this is going to be a really great one. And I like a good blackout and a good blackout story. So that one seemed right up my alley. Excited to check it out. So how's your rainbow doing?
Good. Awkward. I forgot to say awkward.
Awkward.
Awkward. Yeah. Like tacos. A weird name. Tacos.
Okay, so those are the books that we wanted to share today. I wanted to mention a community event that is coming up this weekend. In honor of Juneteenth, there is going to be a celebration. It's the 2nd annual Juneteenth celebration. It'll be at the Waterfront Park from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Sunday, June 20th. And there's going to be music and food and activities. And there's a movie screening. There's going to be portraits. So it should be a really amazing event and all are welcome. If you see signs saying it's on Saturday, June 19th, it's actually going to be on the rain date because there's some rain in the forecast for Saturday. So if you're hearing this on Thursday or Sunday morning, make sure to check it out. And so Hudson's 2nd annual Juneteenth celebration down at the Waterfront Park on Sunday, June 20th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And happy Juneteenth to all of our listeners. But on that note, I think we're just about out of time for today. But we thank everybody out there for listening, and we wish you all a wonderful week with lots of quality reading time. We'll be back next week to talk about some more books. In the meantime, happy reading.
Bye. Bye, 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 bye.
Grandma's hand clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's hand played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast, might fall on a piece of glass, might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hand. hands. Grandma's hand soothe the local unwed mother. Grandma's hand used to ache sometimes and swell. Grandma's hand used to lift her face and tell her she'd say, baby, grandma, understand that you really love that man. Put yourself in Jesus' hands, grandma's hand. Grandma's hand used to hand me a piece of candy. Grandma's hand picked me up each time I fell. Grandma's hand, boy, they really came in a handy. She'd say, Matty, don't you whip that boy. What you wanna spank him for? He didn't drop no apple core, but I don't have grandma anymore. If I get to heaven, I'll look for grandma's hand.
Gonna be a lovely day.
One of the local community events on the WGXC community calendar is the Toolshed Exchange Tool Library Grand Opening event, Sunday, June 20th from 1 to 3 p.m. behind Basilica Hudson in Hudson. The Toolshed Exchange is a tool lending library that will provide Hudson area residents access to a variety of tools and trainings. The opening event features a ribbon cutting with Mayor Kamal Johnson and tool demonstrations and live music by Brasskill. It's all from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, June 20th, outside of Basilica Hudson for the Toolshed Exchange Tool Library Grand Opening. So turn out and find out more information about any event like this in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. Was the song Distance of Sleep from Bill Orcutt and Ithaca-based drummer Chris Corsano from their 2021 album Made Out of Sound. The Melodious Thunk Jazz Festival is one of the latest events that's on the WGXC community calendar. It's 6 hours of jazz at the Henry Hudson Riverfront Park from 3 to 9 p.m. on Sunday, June 20th, featuring the Don Byron Quartet and the Matthew Shipp Trio. Plus, special guest Alan Palmer will do a short workshop and play with his trio. There are also Juneteenth-related activities starting at 10 a.m. But the jazz takes place from 3 to 9 p.m. at Henry Hudson Riverfront Park in Hudson. It's the Melodious Thunk Jazz Festival, Sunday, June 20th from 3 to 9 p.m. Find out all the details on the WGXC community calendar at wgxc.org. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Dave Ellis, who is president of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition. And among other things, they've been very active over the years in trying to get the Dunn Construction and Demolition Debris Landfill in the city of Rensselaer, shut down because of the neighborhood problems it creates. So, Dave, this week the group is out in front of the city council holding a rally. Can you explain what took place at the city council this week?
So we decided to hold a rally of sorts outside of the Rensselaer City Hall prior to the meeting of the Common Council on Wednesday, June 16th. They were going to vote on a resolution calling on the New York State DEC to immediately revoke the operating permit of the Dunn landfill. And that's due in part to all of the negative consequences this landfill has on the Rensselaer community. So the group of Rensselaer Environmental Coalition members, as well as members of the community, rallied out front in support of Mayor Mike Stammel's resolution to the council.
Now, were the residents allowed to testify before the council? And if so, what were some of the key points that some of the neighbors raised?
Yeah, so there was probably more than a dozen people who signed up to speak to the Common Council, which began at 6:30 p.m. It was across the boards that the concerns from the community are this dump needs to be closed, and this council needs to come and speak out about the impacts this landfill is having on the community. We've been going before the same council since 2017 with our concerns, and we've been told all along that DEC is a responsible agency and there's really nothing that the council can do. At a recent council meeting, I asked the council if they would co-sponsor a resolution. I was told that, it was a waste of paper. I asked what that meant, and they said that creating a resolution would do nothing to help the issue with the landfill. And I said, it doesn't hurt to try, but the council wasn't willing to try. So I went to Mayor Mike Stammel, and he created a resolution. We've been working on it since April with input from the Environmental Coalition. And finally, a resolution was brought to the table and the council decided they would vote on it. So, of course, the concerns from the community were a big part of the meeting last Wednesday.
So what has the state DEC Department of Environmental Conservation been saying about this? I know that they have said that the permit, I guess, is up for renewal next year, will be more starting from the beginning. But are you really, having any sense what DEC is willing to do to help the neighbors?
So DEC is saying that based on all of the concerns from the community, and new potential environmental threats such as the PFAS, and Rensselaer now possibly being an environmental justice community based on the latest census data, that DEC will have to undergo a more strenuous process for the Dunn landfill renewal in 2022. They're going to require that there is more public hearings and more public input. So hopefully it'll make the whole process start from ground zero. Dunn will have to submit brand new applications and all kinds of environmental data, and there will be a great deal of public input. So hopefully that will go a long way.
Now, one of the problems with DEC is once, some, polluter has a permit to operate, they seldom, take that permit away. They sort of renew it, whenever it comes up. But I think most people say it was really a dumb idea for the state ever to allow this type of huge landfill, not only to be, right, through a residential neighborhood in terms of the truck traffic, but particularly to be located so close, to a school. Is there any indication that the state's sort of willing to say, hey, I'm sorry, we made a mistake first time we gave you the permit, we really can't continue this?
Well, members of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition met several different times, I believe in 2019, with top officials at the DEC, and they told us off the record that mistakes were made in the past, and they were very sorry. Many of the people who are now with the region for DEC in our area were not part of the original permitting of the Dunn landfill, but they did agree that mistakes were made, and they would take any violations at Dunn seriously and make sure they're addressing these issues, and they told us that they would allow greater public participation. So hopefully, you know, they stay true to those words. There's a new regional director, Tony Luisi. He's a great guy. Whenever we have questions or concerns, he gets back to us right away. So we're hoping that DEC is more transparent with the process.
Now, I remember probably the last public event I did before the COVID shutdown was I covered a press conference you did at the landfill, I guess, in March of a year ago. And, you know, there was some report, I believe it may have been about PFOA and the leachate. I don't exactly remember the details, but whatever happened to that particular issue?
Yeah, so we had a big rally out in front of the gate of the Dunn landfill. We had former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Thang speak, I believe Dr. David Carpenter from the UAlbany School of Public Health, and many different community members talking about the environmental threats from the PFAS that was discovered surrounding the Dunn landfill property. The Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility helped REC with testing of three streams surrounding the Dunn landfill property, and those results were sent to an EPA-approved lab, and all the results came back showing high levels of PFAS. Now, DEC was provided those test results and said that REC was fear-mongering, but later they requested that Dunn landfill do their own testing of leachate on the facility, and the leachate results came back even higher. Now, all of a sudden, residents of the community just received this beautiful flyer in the mail from Dunn using the same exact word that DEC did, saying that the information about PFAS was fear-mongering, and they're claiming that there's no PFAS contamination from their facility, even though that results show otherwise.
So where does the review of this permit and the Dunn landfill go forward, you know, from this point?
So hopefully all of the information that we're gathering, we have the support of the Town of East Greenbush Board. They passed a resolution early last year calling on the DEC to revoke the operating permit for Dunn. Now we have the City of Rensselaer Common Council doing the same thing. The outcry from the public, all of the testing data and the health impacts that we have gathered throughout the years, you know, the records of people's complaints, odor reports, hopefully all of that data will help build a case.